It's that time of the year in southeast Queensland when you start to smell burning. You hope it's not your house or next doors that's gone. You check, everything's fine. You know it's just a controlled burn somewhere nearby. Queensland Fire and Emergency Services has launched Operation Cool Burn, the annual vegetation reduction program, preparing us for fire season in a few months' time. Here from QFES to tell you about what to expect is Wayne Waltzbuehl. When is our fire season in southeast Queensland?
It's really hard to put certain dates on it because each year the situation changes with conditions and lead up weather. But predominantly, we'll use the dates of 1st of September through to the 31st of December is predominantly our fire season.
Okay, and why is it different from the southern states, who seem to have more fires at the end of the summer?
So throughout Australia, the fire season has pretty much moved north to south. So the first fire seasons start up in the Northern Territory and northwestern Queensland and slowly move down the coastline into southern Queensland. And then from about January, February, it's in the New South Wales. And late February, March, it's down in the southern. It's the way it goes. So it's about the seasons leading up into that time. So colder winters, longer winters, more frost, the fuel state becomes drier later in the day. The predominant winds that we get that affect fire behaviour in summer are later in the year in the southern states than they are up in Queensland. So that's been a track we've seen for many years now, that the season sort of starts in the north and works its way down to the south. Yeah.
So we've seen some pretty devastating bushfires in recent years, but compared to southern states, we seem to be fairly lucky. Why do we not seem to have the same devastating bushfires here in Queensland?
I don't know if luck has a lot to play with it sometimes. We do have quite a unique system in Queensland with our Permit to Light Fire system. It's a 12-month of the year program where landowners must obtain a permit to burn off on their property, whether it's piles of vegetation or broad-scale burning off of pastures or forest country. That allows us to have a very good grip and control over the management of fire across the landscape. So that's one thing that really supports us. The other thing that changes between Queensland and going right down to Victoria is our vegetation type and our weather conditions. Our weather in Queensland, particularly coastal areas, is a lot more humid than it is in the southern states. That means there's moisture in the air a lot longer and the vegetation takes up moisture. Our forest types are different and are less abundant than they are in some of those Victorian high country areas where we have seen the devastating fires. We work really closely with the land management agencies in Queensland on supporting hazard reduction burning or fuel reduction burning in a program throughout the period of time, which is pretty much now in our cool burn period, from April through to the end of August. That allows us to do safe fuel reduction burns across the landscapes and across tenures as well. We try not to just burn off on one land ownership. We like to merge different land ownerships that neighbour each other to get a good mosaic of fuel reduction across a broader landscape. Operation Cool Burn brings that together. All of the land management agencies are a part of this. QFRIS are the lead agency and the reporting body on our achievements throughout the Cool Burn period. So organisations like Parks and Wildlife, Forestry, Councils, SEQ Water and a few others come together, identify key risk areas, key communities that might be at risk from bushfire. We'll identify areas that if we reduce the fuel, strengthen fire breaks or do community education programs, that is paying dividends to us in mitigating risks to communities in bushfire areas.
So when it comes to these fuel burnbacks, is the only intended result of these escapades burning off of this land, is the only intention to remove the fuel source, or are there other benefits as well?
Oh, look, each burn will have a specific prescription and a reason for doing it. Now, some might be purely just to, as a fuel hazard reduction program, which would minimise the spread of wildfire. but there are certainly a number of ecological burns that we can do that might only require 50% of the area to be burnt, and that's where the term cool burn comes from. So we can put a low flame height, low intensity fire through a particular area. We can manage that quite well by only getting 50% of the vegetation burnt, and therefore that becomes an ecological burn for whatever reason that might be. It might be we don't want a hot burn because there are birds nesting in that area, and a hot fire would not allow them to nest, and so on. Some fuel food sources for animals might be extremely important, so we don't want to disturb those. Other areas of ecological burning might be we want a hot fire to remove an abundance of weeds in that area. So the prescription would be for a hotter, more intense fire that would kill those weeds out and allow more native species to come through. If we're looking at reforestation, we know that eucalypt forests require a very hot fire to bust open the seed of the eucalypts to allow the husk to be burned off to allow the seed to drop out. It falls into an ash bed, and it rains, the eucalypt trees grow. I mean, that's a natural thing that happens now, but by using fire as a tool, we can support that a lot stronger. So there are many different outcomes we get from using fire across the landscape.
So you're saying we can, I wouldn't know how to do this, but you're saying you can control the fire to minimize the damage to any ecological system that you burn off in?
Pretty much. There's a lot of work being done through a consortium called Southeast Queensland Biodiversity Consortium, which we're a big part of that. And a lot of studies being done into the frequency of fire across different vegetation types. Some vegetation types require fire every 3 to 5 years, and that's predominantly grasses. So grasses grow quickly. They go rank. Animals stop eating it because it's no longer palatable for them. So we burn it off and keep the fresh shoots coming all the time. That gives a food source to them. Other areas could be 15 to 20 year cycle of burning, and that allows whatever species that germinate in that early period to get up off the ground higher where the fire doesn't affect them. So there's a lot of study being put into that, and a lot of it is recognising indigenous burning programs in the past as well. Looking after the land has been something that Aboriginals have been doing for thousands and thousands of years, and we are really looking closely at how that can be utilised into a lot of the aspects today. We've done a lot of these trials, and they're very, very effective methods of using fire on the landscape.
So we are almost running out of time here. Sure. So, Jesse, just...
Yeah, just one final question. What sort of a bushfire plan do we need for our own homes just to make sure that we can stay safe?
Great question. So people can go to the Rural Fire Service website to get a guide on this, on how to develop your own bushfire management plan for your property. If you're living close to a bushfire-prone area or forest area, you really need to have a plan. Even if you're living in the suburbs, 5 kilometres away, you still need to have a plan. And we saw that happen in Canberra, where suburbs in Canberra, nowhere near forest areas, still got affected by ember attack. So just because you're living a little bit away from it doesn't exclude you from the impact of major fires in really bad conditions. The bushfire plan identifies a number of things that you need to do. Are you prepared to stay or do you need to leave? They're some of the questions that you need to answer before any event comes. So you're planned, ready to go. If you're going to stay, there's a number of things you can do around your home that will minimise the impact of any ember attack or direct flame. So you're basically managing the fuel around your home, not storing flammable things like firewood up against your house, basic things like keeping your gutters clean. What will you do if a fire is approaching? Do you have your neighbours' phone numbers? Is there somewhere you can go? Do you have pets? What are you going to do with your pets? Horses, if you've got horses on an acreage property, are you going to relocate them somewhere? And where is that going to be? If you have all this stuff developed before any fire is there, you'll be much better prepared and know what to do. Because let's face it, once the smoke's around, people will start to panic a little and you won't think straight. If you've got a plan documented It's very simple to go back and then look at that plan and work your way through it systematically.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Wayne. That's all great advice.
Yes, thank you very
much. My pleasure.
Thank you.